I don't like people following me. Get off my tail. Do it now.
Or you'll do what?
I'm no fast gun, Bodine.
No. You're just a back-shooting, cowardly son of a bitch.
Sam and Matt rode up to Gates. Gates tensed in the saddle, but kept his composure. He knew he was no match for Matt Bodine or Sam Two Wolves. Few men were.
You'll pay for those words, Bodine.
Ride out of here, Gates. Pack your kit and ride on. If you stay around here, you're going to be buried here.
Strong words, Two Wolves.
But true ones.
What's your interest in this? I'm curious about that. You both own ranches. It's rumored that you both have some money. You're not being paid by any faction that I know of. Why are you here?
We were passing through and took a liking to the place. That's an interesting rifle you have there. What kind is it?
Oh, just a plain old 44-40. Nothing unique about it.
Somehow I doubt that.
You've been warned, boys. Don't crowd me anymore.
Oh, we'll be around, Gates. Just look over your shoulder and you'll see us. I can promise you, we're not going to let you out of our sight.
You two are in no danger.
But our friends are.
The ranchers? They're in no danger either.
Why should we trust you?
Boys, there may be a lot of things you hate, but a liar ain't one of them.
Both Matt and Sam knew that to be true. Most paid killers operated under a strange code of conduct. Some would kill a woman, but not a child. Others looked with contempt upon those who would steal. Many would have nothing to do with a rapist. Still others would not tell a lie. Gates fell in the last category.
Who the hell are you after, Gates?
No one who's a friend of yours.
That doesn't tell us much.
That's all you need to know. Now back off, boys. I won't warn you again.
Gates lifted the reins and deliberately put his back to the brothers. They let him get several hundred yards away and then followed. They followed him all the rest of that afternoon and then back into town. If the man in black was angry, it didn't show in the way he sat his saddle. He stabled his horse and, carrying his rifle, walked the two short blocks to the hotel, Matt and Sam right behind him. Gates was at the front desk.
Send some bath water to my room. Oh yeah, send up some supper too.
Gates turned to climb the stairs and spotted Matt and Sam. He turned and smiled at the Blood Brothers.
I hope you enjoyed your ride, boys. I certainly did. I'm sorry we won't be able to do it again. But I'm leaving in the morning. My work here is through.
Tom Riley came in.
Ralph Masters is dead, boys. Killed an hour ago. Shot at close range while he was walking from the privy back to his office. Blew his head off.
Well, we can't blame it on Gates. He wasn't out of our sight all day.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
When we talked to him this afternoon, he told us he wasn't here to harm any friend of ours. And you know how he is about lying.
He said just a minute ago that he'd be leaving in the morning. Said his work was finished.
What work?
My guess? To distract the law while someone else pulled the trigger.
Yeah, you're probably right. I didn't think about that. Well, I reckon Gates is free to ramble if that's what he's got in mind. I sure can't hold him on anything.
Tom opened the hotel door to leave. A bullet tore through Tom's shoulder and knocked the man to the floor. Matt and Sam dashed out the door.
Somebody get Doc Blade!
The shot came from the east side. You want the front or the back?
You circle around, Sam. I'll take the front. You be careful.
Just before he rounded the corner and stepped into the murk of early evening's twilight, Matt saw Doc Blaine and the deputies coming at a run.
Bam! Somebody cover the bridge on the southeast side of the road. Sam and I will take the rest of it.
Got you, Matt.
They're heading your way, Matt. Two of them. Both of them have rifles.
We got them. They can't get away. One's down, the other's heading your way, Sam.
Two down.
Get some men over here. Carry Tom to Doc's clinic.
I never saw this one before.
Sam squatted down.
Sam!
He's hit, Matt. Sam's down.
Matt ran through the twilight and jumped down the embankment, sliding down to Sam's side.
He's gonna be all right, Matt. The bullet ricocheted off a rock and hit Sam in the side. He's got some busted ribs, but he ain't shot.
That's number three. Oh, God, we all must have hit him. He's shot to pieces.
I'm afraid I'm going to be incapacitated for a time.
Shut up and hold still.
As gently as he could, Matt's fingers moved along his brother's side.
At least two ribs cracked, maybe three.
Ooh, feels like all of them.
Wait till we try to move you, then you'll really know it.
You're such a comfort to me. Go see if you recognize any of the dead.
In the twilight, the dead were dragged and carried to the porch of the hotel, and there, under the eyes of travelers, Matt looked at them. He didn't recognize any of them. Wilbur Gates squatted down beside a body.
Russ House. That one over there is named Pat something or other. I don't recall ever seeing this third one. Marshal Riley was wearing a black hat and a black shirt this evening. From a distance, we resembled slightly. This is interesting.
You mean they may have been gunning for you and shot Tom by mistake?
It's a possibility.
To shut your mouth as to who hired you to come here and do whatever the hell it is you did.
Your words, Bodine, not mine.
Gates stood up and walked back into the hotel. Matt left the porch and walked up the street, right behind the men who were carrying the stretcher with Sam.
Tom's all right. The slug punched right through the meaty part of his shoulder. Tom's a tough old bird. The gunman?
All dead. Wilbur Gates identified two of them. He says he didn't know the third one, and he also thinks the snipers may have been after him. Tom was wearing a black hat and black shirt, remember?
This thing is getting spooky, Matt.
Yeah, at least that.
The next morning, the hotel desk clerk came tearing up the street, waving his arms wildly.
Help! Somebody get the deputies! There's been another killing in my hotel!
Matt was having coffee with the deputies, and all of them stepped outside at the commotion.
Whoa, man, slow down and tell me what's wrong.
Wilbur Gates is dead. That's what's wrong. His throat is cut from ear to ear, and there's blood all over the place. The mattress is ruined, and so is the carpet. Now, I can't have any more of this van. It's bad for business.
It ain't good for people's health, either. Come on, let's take a look.
Matt looked down at the pale face of Wilbur Gates. His eyes were wide open in shocked death.
Razor, or a very sharp knife.
Just look at this room.
Gather up all his possibles, Parley. Tote them over to the office so as I can go through them.
I'll check his horse and saddle. His rifle's gone.
A search of Gates' possessions turned up nothing. Matt went over the saddle and saddlebags carefully. Nothing. Wilbur Gates would carry his dark secrets to the grave. Ralph Masters was buried that afternoon, and the three gunmen were planted without fanfare in the rapidly growing town's Boot Hill. After checking on Sam and Tom Riley, Matt got the key from Van and opened up the newspaper office. He sat until dusk at the desk, going over papers that yielded him nothing except a case of eye strain and a headache. He went to the Mexican cafe for supper. Raul Melendez was there, drinking tequila and looking grim. Matt almost backed out, then said to hell with it and went on in. Matt ordered a meal and a beer. The guitarist, who had been taking a break, climbed back onto his stool to play.
Hey, don't play that damn thing again. Your playing makes me want to puke.
Well, I like guitar. Let's hear something.
The guitarist looked at one gunfighter, then the other. He shook his head, picked up his guitar, and left the room.
He fears me more than you, gringo.
Oh, I doubt it. He probably doesn't want to see you humiliated, that's all.
I think I will kill you, Bodine. I will shoot you to bloody pieces.
The patrons exited quickly, including the owner, the cook, and the two waitresses.
You won't kill me.
Matt ate and drank with his left hand. His right hand remained close to the butt of his gun. Melendez was not only fast, he was tricky.
Oh, yes, I will. Then I will be the most famous gunfighter in all the West. But I will be gracious about it. I will allow you time to finish your meal.
Oh, that's big of you, Raul.
Melendez looked around, a frown on his face.
What's the matter, Raul? Can't you work without an audience?
I am going to enjoy killing you, Bodine.
Bodine sensed they were no longer alone. Another gun slick had moved in behind him.
I didn't know you were this yellow, Raoul.
What do you mean?
You have to have a back shooter behind me?
Very good, Bodine. Come over here, Pud. But Bodine is mine.
Pud Mackin moved to stand beside the seated Mexican gun hand.
I'm gonna enjoy seeing you dead on the floor, Bodine. You're a meddling pain in the ass.
Matt smiled. Matt overturned the table with his left hand and drew with his right hand. Raul Melendez took a round in his left shoulder, knocking him backwards. Matt drew his left hand 44 and drilled Mackin in the belly, doubling the man over. Then Matt jumped to one side and dropped to the floor on his knees, just as Melendez raised his pistol. Both of them were behind overturned heavy tables. Bodine shot out the hanging lamps above the dining area and plunged the battleground into darkness.
Oh, God! I'm hit hard, Raul! Kill him for me! Kill him!
Matt quickly loaded up full and waited, not wanting to be the first to fire and give away his position in the darkness. He felt around him on the floor and picked up an unbroken coffee cup. He hurled it across the room.
I will not fall for that old trick, Bodine.
Matt fired in the direction of the voice and then shifted locations and reloaded as quietly as he could.
Oh, Christ! I gotta get to the doctor.
Pud Mackin staggered to his feet. Pud fell against a wall and slid down to the floor on his butt.
Damn you, hell, Bodine. Damn you.
Come on, Bodine. Come on.
Matt holstered his guns and picked up a chair. He threw it with all his might. Matt stood up as he saw the darkened shape of Melendez rise to his feet, the cane-bottomed chair all tangled up in one arm. Matt moved to the door and looked out.
Van! Parley!
We're here. Nate's over with the marshal. Who's down?
Pud Mackin and Raul Melendez. Get some light in here.
Lamps were found and lit, and Doc Blaine rushed in and knelt down beside the Mexican.
The man's shot to pieces, but he's still alive.
Bodine.
Matt squatted down beside him.
I have money to pay for the damages we caused this poor cafe owner this night. See that he gets it, will you, amigo?
I see he gets it.
You are very good, my Bodine. You are tricky. Like me.
Oh, help me, Doc. Give me something for the pain.
Just hang on a minute or so. You won't have any more pain.
God damn you, Bodine. You should have kept your nose out of things that don't concern you. It hadn't been for you and that damn breed brother of yours, things would have worked out. But it ain't over. Not by a long shot. I hope you...
Whatever it was he hoped for died with him. Matt stood up.
Damn it. I never did get to finish my supper.
Sam griped and moaned about having to stay in bed, but it was all for show. He knew better than to try to get up until his ribs began healing properly. A broke-off piece of rib in the lung was not a desirable thing. Tom was all right, but like Sam, he would be abed for a time. Matt brought him up to date on the previous night's shooting and promised to help out around the office, should they need his services. The townspeople were making plans to return to a single-store system now that John and Bull were no longer at war, and merchandise was being moved back and forth across the street. Matt was sitting on the bench outside the marshal's office when Van nudged him with an elbow.
Things are about to get busy around here.
Matt looked. Ross Sutton and Johnny Carlin were riding in, half a dozen mangy-looking no-counts riding in behind them. They reined up in front of the Red Dog and swung down. After being certain that everyone on the street saw them, they went into the saloon.
Now, what do you suppose that's all about?
I don't know. But as far as I know, there ain't no warrants out on any of them. I don't even know any of those hombres with the two boys.
Doc Blaine strolled up.
Trouble coming?
Maybe.
I'd better go get my bag. Tom and Sam spent an uncomfortable night. The first night usually is. They're sleeping now. I'd hate for gunshots to wake them. But I suppose until this craziness is resolved, gunshots are going to be common around here.
Blaine turned and walked back up to his office.
Look there. Singer standing in his doorway.
One of the area's farmers came into town, his wife on the wagon seat beside him, his kids in the bed. They pulled up in front of the general store.
Kendrick family. Nice people. He keeps the hotel supplied with pork.
Ross Sutton stepped out of the saloon.
You there! Kendrick! I'm talking to you! You keep your damn hogs penned up and off my land! I'll kill the next hog I find on my property!
Kendrick faced the young man, the street separating them.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ross. My hogs don't ever get out of the pen.
Are you calling me a liar, you goddamn stinking pig farmer?
No, I'm saying that I don't know what you're talking about.
You better get a gun.
That's all, Sutton. Back off. Go on in the store, Kendrick.
You go to hell, Dixon. I don't take orders from the likes of you.
The farmer turned, and Ross drew. Kendrick pitched forward and crashed through the plate glass window of the general store. Kendrick's oldest boy ran out of the store just as Johnny Carlin stepped out of the saloon.
Hell, might as well make it a pair.
Johnny pulled iron. He shot the boy through the head.
Son of a bitch. Come on.
Matt and the deputies ran up the street. They all dived for cover as Sutton, Carlin, and their friends turned on them. Women and kids ran for the protection of buildings, and men were scrambling for guns. Johnny Carlin coolly took aim and shot Parley just as he dived for cover. The slug slammed into his leg and broke it just above the knee. Ross Sutton put a .45 slug into Nate Perry's shoulder. Both Sutton and Carlin turned their guns on Matt. Matt rolled behind a water trough. Lawyer Sprague grabbed up his rifle and opened fire from his office window, killing one of those with the rancher's boys. Matt came up on one knee just as the killers jumped on their horses and took off down the alley between Singer's land office and the Red Dog. He leveled his .44 and emptied a saddle before the gang disappeared.
Posse! To your horses, men! Matt, look after things in town!
The deputy was off at a trot as men poured out of stores running for their horses. Doc Blaine was running up the boardwalk, black bag in hand. The undertaker and helper were walking swiftly toward the dead and dying. Doc Blaine stared down at the bloody Parley.
Well, that tears it. There'll be no stopping Bull or John now.
Maybe it's time.
Matt sent a young man on the gallop for Bull and John, and then turned his attention to the safety of the town. He didn't know if the shooting was spur of the moment, or whether there had been a more sinister plan behind it. He had to assume the latter and get ready for anything. After quickly consulting with Tom Riley, Matt started organizing the townspeople into a militia, posting men on rooftops and ordering all fire barrels filled in case the outlaws hit the town with the intention of burning it down. Matt just didn't have any idea what might happen next. He certainly had not anticipated the cold-blooded murder of Kendrick and his son. There was no doubt in Matt's mind that as soon as the ranchers heard the news, Bull and John would kill their kids with their own two hands. If the fathers took their sons, they would hang from the nearest tree. Matt had no illusions about that. This was a hard land that demanded swift justice. He had just finished posting the guards and securing the town as best he could against attack and fire when horses approached from the south. He knew without looking up it was Bull and John. The ranchers reined up but did not dismount. Matt could see that the ranchers and riders were supplied for a week on the trail, and all the men packed two pistols and a rifle in a boot.
Kendrick and his boy dead?
Yep.
Our sons killed him without provocation?
Yeah. Neither Kendrick or his son were armed.
You the law in town now?
I guess. Van's out with a posse.
You keep the peace in town, Matt. We'll send the posse back as soon as we catch up with him. This is family business.
Tom stepped out of the door of the clinic with a blanket wrapped around him.
Bull! Both you men back off!
Sorry, Tom. This is none of your affair. We sired those kids, and I guess helped make them what they are. So it's up to us to deal with them. You just lay back down and get yourself well.
Bull and John rode slowly over to Singer's office. The man stepped out onto the boardwalk.
You be out of town when we get back, Miles. If you're here, I'll personally kill you and hang those gunnies you've got protected.
You can't do that!
If you're here when we get back, you're gonna find out the hard way what we can and can't do. You've been warned.
Miles Singer looked over at the cowboys. He swallowed hard when he noticed the rope dangling from Laredo's saddle horn. A noose had already been fashioned. Lars carried a hangman's noose on his saddle horn as well. The ranchers and their men rode out without another word. Matt loaded up two greeners and carried them in a sack of shells up to the doctor's office, giving them to Tom and Sam.
Just in case.
I have a hunch we'll need them. I think the town is going to be hit.
They're fools if they do.
They have no choice, Matt. It's an act of desperation. For men like J.B. Adams and Ben Connors and the other gunslingers, it's a matter of pride. For the kids of Bull and John, who knows what motivates them? You just get ready. It's going to be a long afternoon and an even longer night.
Next, Matt went into the marshal's office and took a six-gun from a desk drawer, checking the loads and filling up the last chamber. He tucked that behind his gun belt. He moved to the gun cabinet and took down a greener, breaking it open and loading it up with buckshot. He stuck a half dozen shells in his pocket. Van walked in and looked at him for a moment.
What's going on, Matt?
I got a bad feeling, Van, and I learned a long time ago to trust my hunches.
Van nodded his head and strapped on another gun belt. He took a rifle from the rack and checked it, adding a couple more rounds.
Proctor and a couple of hard cases drifted in about an hour ago. I don't like it, but I can't believe any bunch will try again to treat this town.
No, I don't think that either. That dozen or so buildings south of here. Is that the original town site?
No, Mormons built that town about 20 years ago. Then they deserted it and other folks moved in. Changed the name to Big Ugly. Isn't that a hell of a name for a town? Second bunch didn't last long either. Nobody's lived there in 10 years or so. Why?
I rode by there the other day, saw smoke.
Drifter, probably.
How much daylight you figure we have left?
Good 6 hours. It ain't a 20-minute ride down to Big Ugly. Take off if you've a mind to. Hell, Matt, every man in this town is armed, most of the women, too. I've deputized the entire town. It's you them hired guns is after, I'm thinking.
You're right. But I don't want any more gunplay in this town, Van. I'll be down in the ghost town.
Matt, there's about 20 of them old boys. You don't stand a chance.
17, I think. Maybe 18.
Well, that's close to 20, way I figure it.
Either make them come to me outside of town, or they'll come to town looking for me. And this time, some innocent people will get hurt. I don't want that on my conscience. Post guards at both ends of town. When they come looking, tell them where I am.
No way I can talk you out of this?
Nope.
Matt left the office and had the cook at the Mexican cafe fix him a couple of large sandwiches. He stopped Doc Blaine on the street and told him what he was going to do. He noticed that the doctor had once again strapped on his guns.
You give Sam a big dose of laudanum, Doc. Knock him out, all right? I don't want him to know what I'm doing.
Very well. What you're doing is foolish, but you're right about innocent people being hurt if all those gun hands come here. We've been very lucky up to now.
I'll see you when this is over.
Matt turned to walk away.
Matt?
Matt stopped and looked back at the doctor.
As you have no doubt noticed, I handle a gun pretty well. You want me to go along with you?
No. I don't think the whole bunch will show up. At least I'm hoping they won't. 1 against 18 is lousy odds.
Matt picketed his horse on a good graze by a stream and took his rifle, shotgun, and saddlebags. He walked across the meadow to the warping and rotting buildings of the old town. As he walked, he could detect the very faint odor of smoke.
I gotta get that drifter out of here if he hasn't already moved on.
Halfway across the meadow, Matt stopped and hunkered down as a strange feeling swept over him.
Something's wrong. Something's all out of whack here.
He remained motionless in the tall grass and watched as a man came out of a building in the ghost town and walked to a falling down old shed. Something about the man was very familiar, but at this distance, Matt could not make out any facial features, and the big floppy hat didn't help matters any. The man saw to his horse and returned to the shack. Matt still had no idea who it was, but he was carrying a rifle. Matt made his way to the town, staying low and using whatever cover he could find in the meadow. He stayed close to the rear of the buildings and began working his way toward the shack of the stranger. Matt edged closer. He tried to look inside, but the window glass was so dirty he could make out only a vague shape. He moved to the door and made up his mind. He had to do something, and time was running out for him. The hired guns would be here shortly. He pulled his .44 from leather and pushed open the door. Matt Bodine walked in. He and the man looked at each other, both of them startled, and one of them very puzzled.
You!
The man smiled, but his eyes were anything but friendly. He was not wearing a pistol, and the rifle was leaning up against a wall, too far away for him to reach.
In the flesh, Matt. You better close your mouth before a fly decides to take up residence in there. How you been?
Matt closed his mouth and holstered his pistol.
That's better.
Ralph Masters, what the hell is going on here?
I've been playing a game. Fun, isn't it?
Not particularly. And it's one I don't understand. Did you slip that note under my door?
Certainly.
You knew all along about Sutton and Carlin and Singer and Ledoux.
Oh, even before I came out here. Ledoux was my uncle, too.
Jesus. How many kids did that old man sire?
4. All illegitimate.
And you have the proof of that?
Oh, yes.
You're working with Ledoux?
Wrong, Bodine. He's working for me.
The voice was behind him, but Matt didn't have to turn around. The voice belonged to the old mountain man, Ledoux.
This here old Sharps will blow your backbone plumb out of your belly, Bodine. So keep your hands away from them guns.
In about an hour or less, this place will be filled up with hired guns.
Sure will. All working for us.
You don't have that kind of money.
They're working on speculation, Matt, for a bigger piece of the pie at the end of the road.
When Sutton and Carlin are dead and you and Ledoux lay claim to all their holdings.
That's right. Of course, we'll have to kill the wives, but that'll be no problem. And the kids are already written out of the wills. Clever, huh?
Matt stood very still. Everything was wrapped up now, tied with a nice, neat bow. He even had a pretty good idea what the two men had planned for him. He had to make a play, but not with that big Sharps pointed at him. Lead from that Sharps would knock down a 2,000-pound buffalo.
So now what?
Ledoux moved slowly around to Matt's right side, staying out of reach.
Now we wait.
Wait for what?
The gunfighters are going to start earning their keep.
I get it. I get to kill as many as possible.
By golly. Now you know we never thought of that.
I just bet you didn't.
Matt's gaze touched the rifle leaning against the wall.
Gates' rifle. You hired him and then you killed him, right?
No, we didn't hire him and we didn't kill him.
The Carlin and Sutton girls hired him to kill their brothers. Nice kids, ain't they?
How do you know all that?
Johnny Carlin told J.B. Adams that, and J.B. told us.
Who killed him?
Miss your back, hey?
On orders from the kids?
Nah, it was personal. They didn't like each other.
What do you plan to do with Singer?
Those bodyguards he hired, they're working for us. That answer your question?
Few things still puzzle me.
Oh, well, feel free to ask by all means. I'm feeling magnanimous.
How are you going to claim any part of the estate?
From a long distance away, like New York City.
Slick. I'll give you that much. Very slick. When does Singer get a bullet?
All in good time.
You mind if I roll a smoke?
Go right ahead. It might be your last one.
Matt slowly rolled and licked and lit the cigarette. Neither man seemed to notice as he dropped the still-burning match to the floor in the middle of a pile of trash and paper. Within seconds, flames shot up. Startled, Ledoux shifted his eyes to the leaping flames just for an instant. Matt shot Ledoux, the slug doubling the man over. Masters scrambled frantically across the dirty floor for Gates's rifle. Matt plugged him twice, kicked the rifle out of the way, and stomped out the fire. He checked on Ledoux, and the man was cold dead. Then he knelt down beside the still alive and newfound brother to Singer, Sutton, and Carlin.
You don't have long, Masters. If you have anything to say, you better get it said.
You still lose. The gunfighters are on their way. They'll kill you.
No, they won't. Who'll pay him?
Some of the light seemed to leave the man's eyes. He shook his head slowly.
You never did suspect me, though, did you?
Of keeping things stirred up, yeah. Of being a brother, no.
Why in the hell did you have to come along, Bodine?
Just lucky, I guess.
Master's eyes rolled back, and his head lolled to one side, and he slumped full length and dead to the dirty floor. Matt was waiting for the gunfighters when they rode into the ghost town. He held up one hand.
It's over, boys. You know that Bull and John won't rest until the debt is paid with their kids. Your employers, Ledoux and Masters, are dead in that shack. You want to take a look? Help yourselves.
Ben Connors turned to look at the others.
I don't hire my guns for free, boys. The paymasters are dead. You want to shoot it out with Bodine for free, you go right ahead. But you're damn fools if you do.
I'm with you, Ben.
Connors and J.B. Adams rode off without another look back. Slowly, the others followed. In a matter of only a few seconds, Matt Bodine stood alone in the weedy street of the old Idaho ghost town called Big Ugly. He fetched his horse and his saddlebags and sat on the boardwalk under part of an awning and ate his sandwiches, drinking coffee he'd found in the shack. The gunfighters headed back toward town, most of them hanging their guns on the saddle horn to show they were peaceful and were provisioning up and moving on. Those that still held hostile feelings toward the townspeople would head elsewhere. It wouldn't be long before someone would ride out to check on Matt. Just about an hour before dusk, Doc Blaine and several other townspeople and a couple of the smaller ranch owners rode out.
Matt, J.B. Adams says it's over, at least as far as he's concerned. He and about six more rode east. J.B., Ben Connors, Dick Yandel, Burl Golden, and a few I didn't know. They said there would always be another day. The others are camped outside of town. I don't know what they're up to.
Bull and John?
They're right behind us. They can't find their kids. But they did tangle with the scum the kids had hired. Van put those that survived the shootout in jail.
No idea where the kids are?
No. Bull thinks they've left the country. I hope so. I hope they never come back.
Singer?
He's alone now. His bodyguards left with JB and the others. That is one frightened man, Matt. He's sure that either Bull or John will kill him.
At least they'll damn sure give him a good ass-kicking.
So, it's over now?
No, not with the Carlin and Sutton kids still out there full of hate, and those gun slicks still hanging around. It isn't over yet, but it's getting there.
Matt had built a small fire and had moved the coffee pot from the shack outside. He had rounded up several cups.
Coffee's fresh and hot. Help yourself.
John Carlin and Bull Sutton rode into the old ghost town, several of their hands with them.
That was a crazy stunt, boy. You against 17 or 18 gunslicks? Ought to take a belt to your backside. But I'm afraid you might take it away from me and use it on my own butt.
Van Dixon rode up and swung down. He was the first to notice Wilbur Gates' fancy rifle leaning up against one of the remaining awning support posts.
Where'd you get that, Matt?
Matt jerked his thumb toward the shack.
Off of the mastermind of this whole sorry bloody mess.
Doc Blaine, Van Dixon, Bull, and John stepped carefully up on the rotting boards, and Blaine pushed open the warped door. The men looked in, looked back at Matt, and shook their heads. Doc and the men walked back to the fire in the coffee pot, for with the gathering of shadows, the air was growing cool. No one spoke until those who wanted coffee had their cups filled and were sitting or squatting around the fire.
I don't know the whole story, but they told me a lot of it.
Matt told the men everything he had learned at gunpoint in the cabin.
So there were four brothers, but who was the man we buried?
Some drifter, probably. For sure we'll never know.
Did those two in yonder have a hand in turning our kids against us?
I can't answer that, John. I just don't know. You'll probably never know. Not unless your kids have a change of heart and level with you.
Not much chance of that happening, Matt. The girls are gone. All of them, except Connie. and I say good riddance.
The men drank their coffee, then Matt carefully put out the fire.
Well, somebody round up the horses of the dead men. We'll tie them across their saddles and head on back.
The men carried out Ladue and put him belly down across his saddle and tied him down snug. Then the body of Ralph Masters, editor and owner of the Express, was carried out and tossed across the saddle and his hands tied firmly to his feet under the horse's belly. Van looked at the body of the newspaper man.
He shot that drifter in the face with a shotgun?
I guess so. I never got a chance to ask him. Or maybe Ladue killed him. They probably gave the man some of Ralph's clothing. Clothes that all the townspeople had seen him wearing many times and then killed him.
But why did they kill the poor sot? That wasn't necessary. Their plan would have worked without killing some drifter.
I don't know all the answers, Bull. I wish I did. Maybe they were running scared. Sam and I started sticking our noses into the trouble, and we certainly stirred up a hornet's nest. Ralph asked me why in the hell we had to come along.
What'd you tell him?
I said we were just lucky, I guess.
All the men stood for a moment and looked at the lashed down bodies.
Lucky for all of us, but Master's luck just ran out.
That night, the citizens of Crossville lined the street lamp-lit boardwalks as the men rode in single file. They were all, men and women, heavily armed, and they stood silent as the men reined in and swung down. The undertaker and his helper removed the bodies and toted them off.
Matt, you don't think it's over, do you?
No, Bull. JB and Ben and a few like him, well, this is just a job to them. Nothing personal. But men like Yock and Philip McKay and Ramblin' Ed, this cuts against their grain. They've got to call me out to save face, but it won't be here. I'm going to stock up in the morning and head on back down to Big Ugly. I'll wait for them there.
You'll have men with you, Matt. That's firm. And we'll brook no arguments on the matter.
Who do you have in mind?
Me, John, and Doc Blaine. In case you don't know, and I'm sure you don't, only a few of us do, Doc Blaine was one of Mosby's raiders during the war between the states.
How in the hell did you find that out?
I snooped around, Sawbones. Me and John will send word back to the wives that we're staying in town. We'll provision up in the morning and head out. That suits you, Doc?
I'll be ready.
I'm going to see Sam and bring him up to date. And I'll meet you all over at the hotel for a steak.
I wish I was going with you.
I wish you were, too. When this is over, Sam, let's you and me think about heading back home and settling down.
I think it's time, brother. Of course, there's no guarantee that we'll stay there 12 months out of the year.
Matt and Sam shot the breeze instead of other people for a few minutes. Doc Blaine's nurse came in and shooed Matt out, giving him just enough time to say hello to Tom, who had just awakened.
Sam will fill you in, Tom. This mess is just about over.
Well, that just suits the hell out of me.
That night, after filling his belly full of steak and potatoes and apple pie, Matt rolled into bed and didn't wake up until 5 the next morning, when Bull Sutton hammered on his hotel room door. After breakfast, the men provisioned and headed out to the old town of Big Ugly. They rode heavily armed and with their jaws set in determination. Bull and John knew well that their sons might show up with the gunfighters. Both men had resigned themselves to that. John and Bull had left word for Miles Singer. Should he be in town when they got back, they would hang him. Singer was packed and gone by 8 o'clock that morning. Shortly before 10 o'clock, Paul Stewart, Simon Green, Dick Lauren, and a gunfighter called Buck came riding into town.
They're waiting for you down at the ghost town. You know where Big Ugly is?
We know. We'll have us beer and wait for our friends.
Yeah, I figured you'd all have to ride down there in a bunch.
The gun hands had noticed on their way in that everybody in town was armed, heavily. They dismounted, turned their backs to Van, and entered the Red Dog. When Ned Carey, Paul Brown, and Big Dan Parker came in next, Van just pointed to the saloon. Bob Goody, Ramblin' Ed Clark, and Bill Lowry didn't even have to ask directions. They reined up and walked right into the saloon. Jennings, Norman, and Chuck came in, followed by Yock Zapata and Philip Baquet. Proctor came in alone, followed by Donner, Nyburn, Chase Martin, and Blue Anderson. And more.
24. And if the Sutton Carlin brood throws in with that bunch, that'll make it 31-4. That, Tom, is pretty crappy odds.
I can drive a buggy with one hand if you can stand the ride.
I know where our clothes are hidden. All freshly laundered, too.
What are we waiting for?
You're not leaving me out of this. My gun arm ain't busted.
All right, Nate. Get out of bed and come on. You stay here in case Van needs some help. We'll roll your bed by this window and leave your rifle.
A young boy walked by the clinic, and Tom tapped on the window glass, startling the lad.
Go down to the livery and tell Ron I said to hitch us up a two-seater buggy. Fill the back end with hay and bring it behind the clinic. Quickly, move, boy.
Bobby Dumas and Paul Mitchell riding in. Old ghost town is going to be crowded.
Doc Blaine had taped Sam's ribs tight, so as long as he didn't make any sudden moves, he was relatively free of pain. The wounded deputies hobbled, gimped, and limped out to the rear of Blaine's office, while the nurse hollered and squalled at them, threatening dire consequences, and got into the buggy. Sam, in the hay-filled back. They headed for Big Ugly. The gun hands, gathered at the Red Dog and bellied up to the bar, did not see their departure. At the ghost town, the men were ready.
No telling how many there'll be, so we better play this by ear. As outnumbered as we'll be, this is not going to be face-to-face and draw. I can't imagine the gun hands even thinking it will be. We've all stashed spare pistols in the building, so just as soon as we see them coming, we'll head for our spots and let them open up the ball.
Who the hell is that coming?
It's a buggy.
Something tells me I know who it is.
You crazy fools!
Howdy, boys. Matt, you hide the buggy and team with your horses. And the rest of you help us down from here and get us into place. I don't think we've got much time.
Matt helped Sam down from the hay-filled rear of the buggy.
26 the last count.
Sam looked at the ranchers.
No sign of any of your kids.
They'll be along. You can bet they've had somebody watching the town.
Let's get set.
At the extreme south end of the town was what used to be the dry goods store. Sam was placed there. Bull took the saloon. John chose the old falling down bank building. Tom was placed in the old saddle shop, almost directly across from Sam. Nate took a building catty-cornered from the bank. Blaine chose the old apothecary shop.
And you, Matt?
I'm gonna wander. I think I can be more effective that way. But I'll stay on the north side of town to avoid any confusion, as long as I can.
The men shook hands and took up positions. They didn't have to wait long. Matt was in the loft of the old livery stable when he spotted them.
Here they come. I guess a good 35 of them.
Any of our kids with them?
I think so. Yeah, I can make out Johnny and Hugh.
Sorry, selfish, greedy little crapheads.
The gang reined up several hundred yards from the silent old town.
They're waiting in ambush. We go riding in there hell-bent for leather, they'll blow half of us out of the saddle first thing.
Stash the horses and go in on foot. Take your rifles and stuff your pockets with cartridges.
Split up into four groups about the same size. Start working our way around the town, and at my yell, we'll attack.
Hell, there ain't but four of them. Let's just ride and shoot it out. It won't take long.
Yak Zapata glanced at the young man.
Go ahead. That way we can see where the men are waiting in ambush. We will say nice words over your grave.
Ross didn't think much of that idea at all. He shut his mouth and kept it closed. In the ghost town, the men waited patiently. They all knew that if they kept their heads about them and didn't jump the gun, they could cut the odds down by a full 1/4 at the first volley. The outlaws' gunfighters and disgruntled sons fanned out, slowly circling the town. The seven in the town waited. A few of the seven could have dropped some of those stalking them, but they waited until more showed themselves. Blue Anderson dismounted and carefully approached the back door of the apothecary shop. He stepped inside, where Doc Blaine was quickly deciding on a course of action. Blue was propelled backwards out of the door and fell to the ground, dead. And that kicked it off. Matt drilled the gunslinger through the brisket and set him on the ground on his butt. John Carlin lifted his greener and blew a hole in Proctor big enough to stick a telegraph pole through. Marcel Carlin jumped into the old dry goods store and spotted Sam Two Wolves.
Goddamn breed!
Didn't hit a thing. Sam coolly turned and leveled the .44. Marcel was propelled backward out of the doorway. He lost one gun when he hit the ground, but started crawling away. He crawled across the alleyway and under the building occupied by Nate. Above Marcel, Nate waited, staring down through a hole in the rotting floor. Not spotting Nate, Marcel stuck his gun up through the hole. Marcel scurried like a big rat out from under the building. He crawled behind a dilapidated old outhouse and wrapped a handkerchief around his ruined right hand.
That was so good to my brothers. I wish I was back home. I wish I'd never tried to kill my little daddy.
Marcel froze in horror. The big rattler was holding on to the fleshy part of Marcel's hand. Marcel jumped up and went running across the meadow toward his horse, his heart pumping wildly. He made about 200 yards before he collapsed face down amid the wildflowers. Marcel fell on the rattler's tail. Pissed the rattler off, something fierce. Marcel died soon after.
Give this up, boys!
Hell with you! You're all gonna die right here! You hear me, Big John? I'm coming to kill you! I'm tired of living in your shadow!
You ain't gonna live in my shadow no more, Johnny!
Johnny! That was Paul who shot you! Paul did it! God damn you, Big John!
Oh my God. Dear God, forgive us for all the mistakes we've made with our kids.
Paul! How much is your life worth, Paul? Sign your ranch over to us, Paul, and you can ride out!
You got to be kidding!
Bull holstered his pistol and picked up his Winchester. He aimed at the side of the building where he figured Parker was. Big Dan Parker came staggering out, the front of his shirt, from neck to waist, bloody. He swayed for a moment, then fell on his face in the dirt and weeds. Two of those would-be toughs who came in with the Sutton Carlin kids made it back to their horses and lit a shuck out, heading for safer places.
Cowards!
It was Hugh Sutton who hollered. He half rose from behind a water barrel. Bull drilled him clean through.
Damn you! Damn you, Bull!
Randy emptied both his pistols at the old saloon building, hitting nothing but warped and rotting boards. Doc Blaine sighted him in. Doc blew one of Randy's knees into pebbles. The young man fell over and passed out on the boardwalk.
Insanity.
From the loft of the livery, Matt watched Yock Zapata inch his way behind the buildings on the east side of the old town. Matt lifted the .44-40 he'd taken from Ralph Masters. He plugged the half Apache from 400 yards away. Yock stumbled around for a moment, and then, purely unintentionally, sat down in an old wooden chair and looked at the hole in his chest. Baquet looked from Yock Zapata's body to where Matt was, then dove for cover. He started inching his way from cover to cover, making his way toward Matt's loft. Matt watched his progress carefully, but he could get no clear shot. Baquet was being very cautious. The sound came from the ground floor. Matt left the opening and moved silently to the ladder. He looked down just as Simon Green looked up. Green had hired his gun out for the last time. Matt figured Baquet had probably made it to the barn by now. He moved silently to stand on several bales of old hay and was just in time, for Baquet started filling the old barn loft floor with bullet holes. Several shots hit the tightly bound bales, but did not penetrate.
Come on down and fight me, Bodine!
Matt held perfectly still.
You want me to come up, eh? Well, my mother raised no fools, Bodine.
Matt reloaded his rifle as quietly as possible.
I will let you safely down the ladder, Bodine.
The bales of hay again protected Matt. He stomped a foot on the loft flooring. Baquet bought the ruse. Matt saw the ladder tremble under the gunfighter's weight. He raised the already cocked rifle. Baquet's hat appeared. Just the hat. Matt didn't move.
I am glad you are dead, Bodine. I just bought that hat.
Baquet's head appeared. Matt did not have to look to see if he was dead. A .44-40 slug in the face at about 10 feet doesn't leave much room for doubt.
Riders coming!
Jesus Christ, there must be 100 of them!
Bring the town! No one gets out alive unless they want to surrender!
Pistols and rifles started hitting the ground, and men began leaving their positions and walking out into the street, their hands held high.
All right, we yield! It's over! I'll be goddamn if we do!
Ross Sutton and Clement and Pete Carlin ran out into the street, guns blazing at the posse members. John and Bull lifted their rifles with tears in their eyes and sighted on their outlaw sons. It was finally over. Johnny Carlin and Randy Sutton lived through the fight. Randy's leg was amputated at the knee, and Johnny would spend months recovering from his stomach wound. Randy eventually went to college, and after that became a traveling tent preacher. Johnny drank himself to death. Marcel, Clement, and Pete Carlin, and Hugh and Ross Sutton were buried in the old cemetery of the ghost town, along with the bodies of the slain gunmen. Doc Blaine hung up his guns. Daniel Carlin and Connie Sutton were married shortly after the fight at Big Ugly. All of the hired guns were sentenced to long prison terms, vowing someday to kill Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. The daughters of Bull Sutton and John Carlin were never heard from again. If Petunia made it as an actress, she did it under a different name. Tom Riley was elected sheriff of the county, and Nat Carey was elected marshal of Crossville. Parley Davis became a full-time deputy sheriff. Van Dixon married Miss Charlotte. Miles Singer left town and dropped out of sight. John and Ginny and Bull and Roz adopted a whole orphanage of kids and proceeded to start life anew. As for Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves, the brothers tied their bedrolls behind the cantles of their saddles.
You look healthy enough to me.
I am healthy enough to throw you in the creek.
Don't try it. I'd hate to put you back in the hospital.
Where to this time?
Well, I believe we discussed going home.
I didn't think you took that very seriously.
Matt's grin widened.
That's what I thought.
Lawyer Sprague walked up.
Well, boys, what trail do you take now?
We were just talking about that.
And?
I guess we'll know when we get to the crossroads.
You got to settle down someday.
The Blood Brothers nodded in agreement, swung into the saddle, and both of them lifted a hand in farewell. They pointed the noses of their horses west and slowly rode out of town. Little Billy, his dog by his side, waved at the brothers. Matt and Sam returned the wave.
That makes it all worth it.
You are a hopeless romantic. But I suppose I shall have to tag along, watching you endlessly tilt at windmills.
Devil Creek Crossfire is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1993, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation.